Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I was thinking a little bit before the show began today, just what the last few years of Georgia football have been like. You know, Georgia's got, what, a two-time Mackey winner, should have been a three-time winner, a couple of Butkus Award winners, a Bednarik Award winner, a Lombardi Trophy winner. Not Lombardi Trophy, that's for the Super Bowl. Outland Trophy winners, what I mean to say. Heisman finalist in Stetson Bennett. Obviously a couple of national champions. The list of accomplishments for Georgia football in recent years that we've all lived through, we've all enjoyed, it's been incredible. We're going to have the NFL draft coming up a week from today. Another collection of first-round picks. How many first-round picks over the course of, you know, these last few years? It's a staggering number. Just an incredible level of success for Georgia football overall. So much so that, you know, for an audience like this and the tens of thousands, if I were to ask you, like, you know, who is your favorite Georgia player? What players meant the most to you in the last few years? We'd get so many different names. You know, some people would say this guy, some people would say that guy. Obviously, a guy like Brock Bowers would be incredibly popular, and he should be, but he wouldn't be the only name that's mentioned. And when you see that long list of very successful contributors to Georgia, guys who have become, you know, kind of faces of the program, but kind of alongside other guys with similar credentials, I think the one thing that you're left with as a takeaway is that it would be impossible for anyone to be bigger than Georgia football. That Georgia football as an entity, as an idea, is going to be bigger than any one person. And by the way, that's also true for Kirby Smart himself. Kirby Smart has contributed to and provided Georgia with more success than it was having before he got here. But Georgia football as an idea, as an organization, as an entity, is still even bigger than Kirby Smart himself. So if that's true for Kirby, who's lasted longer and will be here longer than any player, it's obviously also true for any individual player. You can't be bigger than Georgia football. So therefore, the players who are most likely to succeed at Georgia, knowing that you can't be bigger than the program overall, the players who succeed at Georgia are going to be the ones that understand that, and therefore they don't really even try. Instead of trying to come here and sort of superseding what the program has been and the other players who play, let me just, if you're a player, you would say, let me just try to fit in with this and contribute the best that I can to a cause that is larger than me, that existed before I got here, that will exist far after I'm gone. That's the sort of playing mentality that seems to benefit the players who are most likely to succeed at Georgia. Now, the reason why I bring all of this up is because of the news of the day. Yesterday, somewhat as expected, four-star quarterback Ryan Montgomery out of the state of Ohio announced his commitment to the University of Georgia. In fact, we'll show you some of the scenes here from up there in the Buckeye State as he made his announcement. You'll be able to hear some of this coming from our friends at WTOL-TV. That's a Toledo station. Watch Montgomery here, and if you're listening to radio podcast, I'll describe this to you. We are always a fan anytime live animals get used in a commitment announcement. Big fan of all of that. We're always for that. This is not a white English bulldog. Those are, you know, pretty hard to find. But it is a bulldog nonetheless. And it was thrilling for the people on the scene there at Findlay High School as Montgomery brings out the bulldog, celebrates there that way, and a great shot from WTOL-TV in Toledo kind of getting that done. And Montgomery looks great as well with the Georgia T-shirt on with friends and family kind of dressed the same way. So it's a great ceremony, a lot of fun. We love that kind of theatrics. You know, we've always been fairly high tolerance for recruiting dramatics. We like hat ceremonies. We like, you know, using props. We like, you know, anything like that, even the occasional swerve from time to time. We think it's probably pretty fun. And so bringing out the live animal here is great. And I think Georgia fans yesterday, you know, for the most part, universally celebrated Montgomery landing at Georgia. And I think they had a really good time with the way in which Montgomery did that. But when you dive deeper into this, you see even more to like about Montgomery. If you want to go back live on video yesterday, thought Connor Riley and Jeff Sintel had a great video together talking about the Montgomery commitment. And Jeff, I thought in particular, did a great job of describing kind of why Montgomery was the right fit to Georgia, given the fact that he's obviously not the only quarterback we've talked about for Georgia here in this cycle. But ultimately, Montgomery was the right choice. Yesterday, live on video, right after it happened, Jeff Sintel gave us a great discussion for why Montgomery for Georgia here right now. I really like this. Take a listen.
There is some debate, and I realize it's a healthy debate, about whether Julian Lewis was the best quarterback, Matt Zollers was the best quarterback, or Ryan Montgomery was the best quarterback. That's debatable. The recruiting rankings have both of those gentlemen ahead of Ryan. I feel that it's a much easier debate to look at which one is the best fit for Georgia. I think Georgia has reached the point, and I don't want to make it seem like it's pompous or elitist, but I think Georgia has reached the point where they don't have to bend to the whim of high school prospects. I think that Ryan is the best fit for Georgia because I heard him tell it to me months ago. He said, I don't mind waiting. I don't mind pulling Carson back because when it's my turn, the Georgia development machine will have me ready to play great football. He also said NIL is not a very big part of his decision.
So that's Jeff Sintel, and that is so in keeping with what Georgia has been doing in the quarterback position for a long time, which is Georgia trusts its competitive process for determining a quarterback, I believe, more so than to trust its sort of scouting process for that. And I think some programs are a little bit different. Some programs would look at a quarterback and say, hey, we believe in you so much, we're not going to recruit any other quarterbacks other than you. In fact, some of the programs that were recruiting Ryan Montgomery essentially treated him that way. We believe in you so much, you're the only quarterback that we're going to recruit. But y'all, I mean, y'all pay attention to football. You know what's going on in this sport. Look at the NFL. These are personnel men. These are general managers. They get paid to do this for a living. And their batting average on picking quarterbacks is no better than 50-50. So to look at any quarterback and say, I trust my own scouting sense well enough to say, you're the only quarterback that I want, so therefore we're not going to recruit any other quarterbacks besides you, and we won't do that for the following year either. You're going to be our guy. We're essentially guaranteeing you a chance to be our starting quarterback. That'd be a foolish thing to put too much faith in if you're a football organization, because we have a long track record in the NFL of we just simply don't know which quarterbacks are going to pan out and which quarterbacks are not. After all these years of, you know, advanced scouting and advanced stats and sort of math nerd type people making the football conversations maybe a little bit smarter, the actual task of picking quarterbacks is still essentially like grasping at straws. I mean, it is just, after all this time, it is still no more scientific than it ever was. And so therefore, Georgia, I believe, is probably pretty sharp to say, since it's very difficult to know who's actually going to be good and who's actually going to be not. Case in point, Georgia's had five stars flame out, at least to a certain extent, and had former walk-on go on to become a Heisman finalist and win two national championships. Since the process is so erratic, since the predictions are so difficult, instead of sort of trusting our own scouting on saying, this is the guy and he's going to be great, how about we trust the competitive process to let this play out on the field? And as I said a moment ago, the players who have the best chance of thriving at Georgia are going to be the players who are comfortable in that environment. And as Jeff Sintel says there, Ryan Montgomery is one of those guys who will be comfortable in that environment. How do we know this? Because Montgomery's father himself is also sort of said this too. I thought last night before the Hedges presented by Kroger, once again with Jeff Sintel, I thought really good stuff from Montgomery's dad in kind of getting into the comfort they have at Georgia and the fact that stuff that makes Georgia a little bit of a turnoff for some players perhaps draws them to the Georgia program even more. This is really good stuff from Montgomery's father last night before the Hedges presented by Kroger. Take a listen to this.
One thing I tell him as a dad, well, all my kids, is that the only thing I can promise you is that you're going to face adversity, right? So it's all about how you respond. I mean, obviously, hopefully you're successful, hopefully, and you will be in life and at times, but you got to be able to respond to adversity, especially with Ryan at his position. And it's recruitment. It's been a lot of adversity. You know, there's been some lows along the way, but he's a pretty even-keeled kid. He's confident in himself. And he knows that he's going to put the work in. And what he's excited about at Georgia is, again, the way that they go about their practices, about their film study, and the players that they have. So he's excited to have elite kids around him and elite kids to push him. To your point, Jeff, we know it's Georgia. They're going to take the best quarterback behind them and the best quarterback in front of them, and that's what our expectation would be. And Ryan will confidently compete with anyone. And you're right. He knows that it might take a little bit longer out of Georgia, but that's the price you pay when you're going after national championships again.
Listen, I think it remains to be seen if Ryan Montgomery will prove to be a good quarterback for Georgia, but I'm pretty sure that Mr. Montgomery is a good dad, right? Based on that kind of mindset, that kind of mentality, those kinds of values that he's trying to instill into his son, I think you'd feel pretty confident in Mr. Montgomery's fathership skills based on what he's saying there. And it's fairly obvious why Georgia wanted Montgomery based on all of that, right? I mean, all of this is a little bit of a crapshoot. No one can know for sure. But if you're that comfortable in this scenario, if you're that confident in your own ability to say, yeah, recruit good quarterbacks before me, recruit good quarterbacks after me, such as Jared Curtis, top player in the class of 2026 that Georgia does hold onto the commitment of for right now. If you're that confident in your own abilities, you would say, yeah, recruit whoever you want to. We're going to come here and compete and let the best man win. That's the kind of attitude that has worked well for Georgia quarterbacks before. It's the kind of thing that's working well for Carson Beck right now, and it could work for Montgomery in the future. And to me, that's the overall bottom line of this entire conversation. I think Montgomery is a name in which some Georgia fans have had to try to familiarize themselves with here pretty quickly. Admittedly, we have not talked as much about Ryan Montgomery as we have other quarterbacks. That's just a verifiable fact. But if you're today playing catch up on all of this and wondering, well, why as a Georgia fan do I feel good about Montgomery? It's because of what I just said, that Montgomery in many ways looks like what's working at Georgia right now. Carson Beck was also a four-star quarterback who, you know, was probably a little lower rated in his class and did have to wait for a little while, more than a little while in his mind, to become the starting quarterback at Georgia. But here he is now with a possible inside track towards a Heisman Trophy, maybe being a number one overall pick. That's at least a possibility. And obviously with a chance to lead Georgia to great success here in his final year for the program. And Montgomery, in so many ways, the specs kind of match up with what we see for Beck. That doesn't guarantee anything for Montgomery, but it does give you a proof of concept that he is similar to what is currently working at Georgia. And that is a good reason to be excited about the future for Ryan Montgomery here at UGA. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Meriwether and Tharp. And we are happy to have you with us. You're live with us on video at 10 a.m. across all platforms. You're with the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and a podcast wherever you find them, Apple, Spotify, everything else in between. Just really happy to have you with us here today, and so thankful to our friends at Meriwether and Tharp who make it all possible. Your source for Georgia divorce. That is what Meriwether and Tharp is all about. Now listen, we're in the midst right now of a lot of fun stuff going on around here. We got, you know, Braves baseball going on. They just whipped the Astros yesterday. You love that. We got Georgia getting a quarterback commit. You always love that. We're about to take our Dog Nation cruise. You better believe. Well, we're excited about that. Jeff Sintel and I have been on the phone with each other the last couple of days, kind of making cruise plans and doing some things like that. And I just love having those conversations. You know, anytime you have a chance to have some fun in life, it's probably a thing to do, and so we're all about that. But I'm also aware that real life creeps in on these things too. And sometimes the fun you want to have or the future that you plan that was at the time in your mind full of fun, sometimes reality just sort of deals you a different hand. And if that's the situation you find yourself in, I'm speaking specifically here about the divorce process, then I'm really sorry for you. I don't say that flippantly or I don't say that casually. I really genuinely feel pain for you along with you. I certainly sympathize with you as you kind of you go through all of this. And as you've heard me say before, if I could take it away from you, of course I would. And if you could find a way to avoid it, I believe you probably should. But if it's something that you just can't help, it's just going to happen. Well, let's talk about the next best thing for you. The next best thing for you is to find a strong advocate to kind of go through this with you, because a lot of this is all about setting yourself up for success and happiness in the next season of your life, and how you handle this now will benefit you in the future. And that's what Meriwether and Tharp is all about. Now, one of the things I love about Meriwether and Tharp is they listen when you talk. And so they've gone through thousands of these kinds of cases in the past, and they've heard thousands of stories. And in hearing people sort of say the same things in similar patterns over the course of years, it gives them a chance to shape the way in which they serve you, kind of anticipating what your needs are going to be. And one of the things they've learned after having thousands of conversations with people who find themselves in this scary and challenging situation of divorce is that one of the biggest, most immediate concerns you might have is, how do you pay for this? You know the kind of cost certainty that people seek as they go through the divorce process. And understanding that there's kind of sort of a few categories of these types of situations. Some of these situations are fairly straightforward. Both sides kind of agree. And so from that standpoint, maybe you feel like you can kind of move ahead quickly. Well, for a situation like that, Meriwether and Tharp's going to offer you a kind of a DIY option where that can be as low as $99. Let me try the English language again. $99, I mean to say. You pop in, you get it done, you move on. But there are other situations where maybe you want a little bit more hands-on coverage. Perhaps you want the sort of full-service traditional coverage. Meriwether and Tharp can also provide that for you there too. But maybe you want something kind of creative, like what they call their Model M&T system, which is kind of a flat fee that you can pay knowing how much your divorce process is going to cost, or perhaps a subscription rate you want to pay on a per-month basis while your divorce process is ongoing. All of these very creative things that Meriwether and Tharp can do for you. So please find them online, GeorgiaDivorceTeam.com. GeorgiaDivorceTeam.com. They've been in Atlanta. Now they're in Savannah. They're in Athens. They're in Carrollton. They're coming soon. Other places there as well. So find them online, GeorgiaDivorceTeam.com, for a lot more on that. All right. So let's do this. Let's get ready to we're going to talk to Terrence Arrett here in a moment. Really good stuff coming up with Terrence. We'll find out more about what he thinks about Ryan Montgomery there as well. But prior to that, I want to go around the doghouse here today. And one of the things I want to get into as we're around the doghouse is the other kind of reverberation to the Ryan Montgomery news. Obviously, you can't talk about this without talking about what this means to the quarterback we've actually talked about probably the most in this class of 2025, and that is Julian Juju Lewis. Is this now riding on the wall for Lewis and perhaps a statement about Georgia's interest in Lewis if it's already taking this quarterback commit with Lewis, you know, at least officially anyway, scheduled to take an official visit to Georgia at the end of May? Once again, going back to the video that Jeff Sintel and Connor Riley did yesterday, Jeff did kind of get into, our recruiting insider got into, what perhaps this means for five-star quarterback Julian Juju Lewis. I want you to hear that right now. Here's Jeff.
I think it makes sure this recruitment would be on Georgia's terms. Like, the door would be open for Juju to come in and say, and maybe that's another show in itself, Connor, for us to say, like, you know, if Julian Lewis came in to compete with somebody and he chose Georgia and he's like, hey, let the best man win, I'm here to compete. You know, maybe that would be some image polishing for the way a lot of Georgia fans, unfortunately, look at this recruitment of Julian Lewis as it's like a mercenary Wild West highest bidder recruitment. I've been told that, you know, USC currently doesn't have the highest bid. So that's one thing there with Julian to consider. But I really feel like, Connor, what's happened here is Georgia has made its decision. I feel like Georgia got to a point that said, we're going to take the first guy that wants to commit to us. And Ryan Montgomery, man, you'll see in the Dog Nation story, as nice as the Montgomery family could be with respect to Florida and South Carolina, Georgia was always the choice here. And they were really just kind of jockeying to find, going through due process to see if Georgia doesn't work out, where else it would be. Like I said earlier in our show, maybe the one thing I hope people glean from this discussion is that, you know, the most talented quarterback in the country might not be the most likely to succeed at the University of Georgia. And I know that might get a couple of, like, you serious Clarks looking at me right there, but Connor, I think you understand what I'm talking about here is I think it takes a special person to be able to thrive and wait and endure at Georgia with the way they like to kind of battle test their quarterbacks.
So I think that's incredibly compelling from Jeff. And, you know, the idea that the Julian Lewis recruitment's about whoever can eventually be the highest bidder. Now, I want to be fair to Juju, because Juju himself has said, hey, those, interpretations of my desires and that discussion about me, Julian would say, that's not what I really am, and people are miscasting me when they say that. I will show you this, as we've shown you before, on the X platform, when Lewis sort of fired back at NIL rumors like that, not just from Jess Sintel, but from anybody who might be saying that. You know, Lewis on X the other day was saying, I've always picked development over money. NIL was legal in other states, but I stayed in Georgia to play high school for Joey King and Carrollton so I could be ready for the next level. He says, hearing rumors about me and my family, but the only thing you need to believe are my actions. That's what, you know, Julian Lewis said about all that. But nonetheless, the rumors do persist that the recruitment of Lewis is more of a negotiation than an actual recruitment. Well, here's the deal. If that is true, then it's important to understand that every negotiation in anything, whether you're negotiating over NIL deal for a quarterback or a used car, every negotiation is always won by the party that wants the outcome the least. Whoever has the least stakes in the game always has the upper hand in every negotiation. And ultimately, how do you truly prove your, I guess, lack of, you know, devotion to the outcome? How do you prove that? It's by a willingness to walk away from the table. And so yesterday, Georgia showed, when it comes to Julian Juju Lewis, that they were willing to walk away from the table. They were willing to say, you know what? We don't really care. We've got a quarterback we like, and it's Ryan Montgomery. Now, my advice to Georgia would be, they obviously won't listen to my advice, but in a world in which they would, I'd say there's nothing wrong with continuing to recruit Julian Juju Lewis. Clearly, Ryan Montgomery, as his father said earlier, is not going to be bothered by that. They're here to compete with whoever's here. And while Montgomery may be good, the truth is the faith at Georgia is always going to be in the overall competition. So in a competition that could potentially also include Julian Lewis would perhaps be even better. So I certainly wouldn't tell Georgia to stop recruiting Julian Juju Lewis, but perhaps now if that recruitment does continue, and maybe it stops, maybe it's done, maybe Lewis doesn't take his official visit, and maybe this, as Jeff has suggested, really does signal the end as it relates to Lewis. But if it does continue a recruitment that sort of feels like a negotiation, now Georgia is negotiating from the position of strength. Because in the past, you sort of feel like the Lewis camp thought they were in that. In fact, I'll show you what Lewis's father once told Jeff Sintel at DogNation.com. This is sort of the only thing you say. You only sort of say this when you feel like you're in control of the negotiation process. Lewis's father telling Jeff that Lewis, whatever school he chooses, could sit 1 year, but 3 years, the way that Carson Beck has. Lewis's father said, we can't see that. I don't even think psychologically he could handle that. That's Julian Lewis's father at DogNation.com back in March, and that's sort of a heavy-handed demand from a father about a quarterback on a school that he hasn't yet enrolled at. And Georgia's just simply not going to make those kinds of promises. So will Georgia continue its negotiation / recruitment with Julian Lewis? Maybe it will, but if it does, it'll do so from a position of strength, not making any promises, not accepting any demands, simply saying, you have the same opportunity that Ryan Montgomery has. Do you want to come here and compete? Do you want to come here and earn it? If so, then maybe Georgia could still be open for business for Julian Lewis, but certainly a story worth following. And that is Around the Doghouse here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp here today. Okay, so we want to get more on this here coming up from a guy who kind of knows the landscape on the field as well as anybody, plus a little bit more from what we saw this past Saturday at G-Day. On a Thursday for us, that means the great former Georgia wide receiver. So let's do all of that right now as we welcome in Terrence Edwards here today to Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp.
And across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Terrence Edwards, always a great voice, always a guy that certainly knows the game as well as anybody, and we're happy to have him on the program here today. You know, Terrence, I guess let me bring you in on what we were just discussing. First of all, let me start with Ryan Montgomery himself. Have you seen much of Montgomery? I know we talked about a different quarterback the other day, Matt Zollers. Now we're talking about Ryan Montgomery. Have you seen much of Montgomery? And What do you make of Georgia taking this commitment before a more high-profile player like Julian Lewis even takes his official visit? How do you kind of process everything that's played out for Georgia, in other words, over the course of the last 24 hours?
Yes, after he committed yesterday, I went back and watched his film and still forming an opinion on him. So if Coach Bobo and Coach Smart is willing to take the young man commitment, knowing that you have a Julian Lewis out there, then I'm going to take their evaluation to the bank that they believe that this young man could do some special things, or he's the right fit for the Georgia program. So I'm going to continue to go in and dive into his film. But I haven't seen a lot. I just started watching yesterday.
Can we keep it real here for a moment? For some people, they're going to view this as not just a, positive take on Ryan Montgomery, but perhaps Georgia kind of giving a little bit of a negative take in the direction of Julian Lewis of, we want Montgomery and we don't want Lewis, therefore we're going to accelerate Montgomery's decision ahead of what would have been a Julian Lewis official visit. Do you take this as, a signal of maybe negative feelings that Georgia had about Lewis for whatever reason they might would have had them? Do you take this that way?
No, I take it as way as I spoke about last week is Kirby has to protect the program, and I don't think he's going to put all his eggs in one basket and not get a quarterback in this recruiting cycle. So I believe he gave the Ryan Montgomery the okay to go ahead and commit so he can have a 25 quarterback. I believe that the Bulldogs will continue to recruit Lewis. I just believe that they didn't want to put all their eggs in one basket and get stuck at the end and not having a quarterback in this class.
One of the things we talked about a good bit before you joined us was the fact that Montgomery and his camp seemed pretty comfortable with the idea of coming here and compete and potentially traveling a similar path to what someone like Carson Beck has traveled to Georgia. As a coach yourself, how important is that mindset in a player? You know, the idea that, you know, you want to fit in well and you want to compete, you want to fight for what you get, you want to earn it. You know, that's the kind of thing that I imagine almost any coach really likes to hear. And in the case of Montgomery, it seems like it's an authentic and genuine statement. As a coach yourself, how much do you like hearing that from a player at the quarterback position, a spot where maybe sometimes you don't always hear players speak that way? How much do you like hearing that?
I love it. I think that family gets the long game and not the short game, that they can come to a place like the University of Georgia and get developed. And you don't have to rush to get on the field. I know all the players would love to play the true freshman. But I think just from hearing those comments that the family understands that there's a development piece that goes along with it. And you could take the path of Carson Beck waiting 2-3 years to go and play. And you still can be a high draft prospect once your time and your eligibility is up. So I feel like, you know, as a coach, you like to hear that from a family, that knowing that this kid is probably won't transfer out of your program after 2 or 3 years.
I want to move on. Obviously, Georgia fans were watching very closely last week. A bunch of recruits come in for G-Day. A guy that you're close with is Travis Smith. And I know Jeff had a great story about Smith at DogNation.com the other day. You know, obviously, you're not going to reveal the kind of private conversations you have with your protege there, but I am sort of curious about this. You know, we see a lot of Georgia kind of rolling out the red carpet for moments like this. From the player standpoint, what are they looking to see when they go to G-Day? And what's that experience like of those conversations kind of, you know, I guess around all of that? Georgia seemingly does these kinds of visits very well. On the player side of this, what's it like to be one of the guys who kind of gets that red carpet treatment on a day like this?
Yes, for a guy like Travis, he's had the red carpet treatment all year or whatever institution he goes to see. They're going to throw out the red carpet. He's just trying to see where he fits best, where he could see himself being coached by the receiver coach, being coached by the offensive coordinator, and being coached by the head coach. So he's just trying to see if this is an environment that he can see himself in, how the game day routine goes, how the coaches interact during the game, even though it's a spring game, just how the coaches interact with the players. So it's a little bit more and a little bit deeper than just the bells and the whistles. It's more about trying to see if this is a place where he can see himself for the next 4 or 5 years.
And I compare this a little bit to, you know, go back years ago, we would have talked about a guy you were training like a Reed Gilbert. And I think at the time, Terrence, when Gilbert was considering coming to Georgia to high school out of Marietta, he was one of the most productive players that I can remember at the state at that time. He had been an incredible pass catcher. I think the message from Georgia would have been, oh, if you come here, we'll use you. Yeah, we haven't really been using tight ends that well in the past, but if you come here, we'll use you, and we'll make you into something good, and we'll kind of create an offense that works for you. In other words, Georgia was kind of asking a player like that to believe in something that they couldn't yet see with their own eyes, and that's never an easy recruiting pitch, no matter how hard you try to make it. For receivers now, it's a little bit different. I mean, you know, Ladd McConkey might be a first-round pick. You know, George Pickens was incredibly successful at Georgia. You know, a little bit different position, but Brock Bowers, you know, goes down as one of the greatest players of all time now. That all of a sudden now, the Georgia offense doesn't have to say, hey, if you come here, we'll use you. I know we haven't used these other guys very well, but they weren't as good as you are. All of a sudden now, Georgia can sell a little bit more of kind of a, I guess, a proven track record. How much easier do you think it makes for Georgia to recruit guys, you know, like you're working with in Travis or, you know, C.J. Wiley or anybody else, knowing that all of a sudden now Georgia can point to success stories and say, you can be the next one of these guys now. Doesn't that make it a little bit easier to get your foot in the door with a player like Travis?
Almost definitely. It's definitely when you have evidence to show the recruit and his family that this is how we're going to develop you. And if we develop you correctly, this is the outcome. And you can see that now they have players that's going that have been drafted. I mean, you just look at Ladd. Ladd is one that's probably going to be, in my estimation, a late first round to second round pick. Marcus is going to get drafted. So you're going to have two receivers drafted. Next year is probably going to be Dumb. So the receiver room is getting drafted. So now you have evidence to show that you don't have to have 1,000-yard receiving years to get drafted here. But if you come here, you're going to get seen on TV each week, and coaches understand that you're going to get developed. So those are the things that the data can show a recruit. So now the family can actually see that we're not just talking about it. We can show you.
So I want to transition to what happened on the field for G-Day on Saturday. Big statistical day for Dominic Love. It also had an incredible highlight catch there as well. And I think this echoes with what you had seen from Dom during your spring practice that you attended there as well. Is this just additional familiarity with the Georgia offense that perhaps has allowed Lovett to do what he's done in practice and then kind of punctuating that with a good performance during G-Day? Is that what this is? He's just been here for a year now, and he just sort of knows the offense better. Is Georgia using him differently because it maybe needs more from him this year? Why do you think the light seemingly is coming on for Lovett in such a profound way right now?
I just think that the difference is, and not taking a shot at Missouri, it's just different. Missouri and Georgia are just two different programs right now. I think he really had to understand the Georgia way, the way they practice, everything. And I think he's just comfortable now in doing things the Georgia way, doing things the way Kirby expects everyone to do it. So, yeah, I just think he's the next man up. You know, a generational tight end is leaving for the NFL, and I think he's the next best thing in that receiving room of pass catchers, and rightfully so. I saw he dominated practice, and it translated over to the spring game, and I think he's probably going to be the leading receiver this year because he's worked his tail off to put himself in that position, and it's going to show. So I'm very excited about his potential this year. If he stays healthy and everything, the receiving room so deep, you're not going to be able to just double him because you do have other receivers in that room that show on G-Day as well that they have the potential to be superstars as well.
Yeah, I think that's right. And then, you know, another guy that you've kind of talked of a little bit is Ra-Ra Thomas. That, okay, well, if Thomas is coming back from injury, he's also a year later in the program, and perhaps the transition for him is even more difficult because, you know, obviously, you know, rest in peace, but, you know, the Mike Leach offense was so different than almost anything that anybody does in college football, certainly that Georgia runs, that maybe there is still a bright future here for Ra-Ra Thomas there as well, because he's also now been here for a full year.
Oh, most definitely. I think he's definitely another guy that we're going to count on. He's in the system now for the second year. And just the biggest thing for Ra-Ra now is just staying healthy. His skill set is there. We saw glimpses last year of what he can bring to the table. He understands the offense now. He rebuilt his mind to play in a pro-style offense. Now his biggest thing is just staying healthy. And if you got those two guys, along with Kobe Tatum, along with Dylan Bell, along with Anthony Evans, that is a group right there that is potentially can probably be the best in the SEC. So I'm looking forward to all those guys staying healthy. And I didn't mention Arian Smith. So there's a lot of guys in that room that can make plays on any given Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, the Colby Young stuff was some of the most exciting stuff for me for G-Day, because this is exactly what we're told. And you know how this is, Terrence. You know, for a lot of us, all we're doing is we're hearing the rumors, we're hearing the whispers, we're, you know, hearing whatever. And on G-Day, we want to see, okay, was that true? You know, do we see something on G-Day that makes us believe the stuff that we heard about was true? And when he's catching a red zone touchdown, when he's, you know, kind of going up high for a third down across the middle on a dart from Carson Beck, that's what the long frame, big bodied receiver was kind of brought here to do. And it was really cool for me. It was only a couple of catches, of course, but it was really cool for me to see Young in the game doing some of the stuff that we were told through the rumor mill that he was doing during practice. It was actually one of my favorite parts of G-Day.
Yeah, first of all, if you're going to wear number 8 at this school at receiver, you have to be a baller. And he showed just a small glimpse in the G-Day game. So if Kobe Young had the gall to go and ask for number 8 or a transition to number 8, then I like him a lot. I like his moxie. I like everything about the young man. Just watching him, you can see we just need him to be kind of like what Mark is, just that true, dependable third wide receiver. And he has the catch radius. He's long. He is bigger than you can imagine. So I'm excited about the young man and his red zone presence. I just think, just like Marcus was a third down monster last year, I really think he could be that third down guy that just make contested catches. And I just love to see this number 8 scoring touchdown.
I love to hear that, Terrence. That's awesome. Let me ask you about one more guy, then you can mention anybody you want to. I like what I saw from Anthony Evans. Anthony Evans, that's a fun prospect right now. He made some really nice catches on Saturday. What do you think about him taking that next step?
Yes, he's definitely going to be in the mix. He definitely has taken that next step from high school to college, from a freshman, now going to be a sophomore. I think he's probably going to play behind Dom this year. And naturally, once Dom exits for the NFL, then Anthony being his third year in college, and he can naturally just take that position. And I love everything that I saw out of him in practice. I love what I saw out of him in the game. And I think, I don't know for sure, just going off the bowl game, he's probably going to be our returner. He has electrifying speed, something that we haven't had back there in a while. I know Ladd is fast. I know we have had some fast guys back there, but none of them can top Anthony Evans' straight line speed.
Anything else from the game, Terrence, that you wanted to mention? Those are some of the guys, I guess, that sort of stood out to me. Anybody else that you feel like you want to make sure you get a mention in for right now?
You know, I just think a guy that's another one of those under-the-radar guys, and he's Sakobe White.
Yeah.
We got to give him some love, and I've known Sakobe for a while, watched him play with Hustle Link, watched him play at Cass, and he's a name that a lot of people's not mentioning, but he's just one of those football players, and I just think once he get his opportunity, maybe not this year, maybe he could get some special teams. Same thing I kind of said about Ladd. He is one of those guys that he's just a football player. He's going to go and do anything possible, not, you know, the five-star. He's just going to come in and work. So, Sakobe White is one of those under-the-radar prospects that I'm looking forward to see. The same development that I saw in Ladd, I can see in Sakobe.
Yeah, I'm really glad you bring that up, because Sakobe had a touchdown on Saturday. We haven't talked nearly enough about him. And I think this is a guy that Georgia fans are going to love. And, you know, you talk to people around the CAS program, they'll tell you, unlike a lot of these prospects, you know, Sakobe was a really good two-way player for Cass. He was a terrific safety and obviously, a very good, you know, Georgia-level wide receiver. But a little bit different, and Terrence, I'm sure you know this, a little bit different than a lot of prospects, Sakobe would have loved to play defensive back at Georgia. He really enjoyed doing that. And, you know, Georgia, you know, most of the time it's like if I'm a two-way player, I want to play wide receiver because there's more glory there. In the case of Sakobe, I was led to believe he'd have been thrilled to play defensive back at Georgia, but they sort of thought his body type was a better fit for the receiver position. So that's what Georgia's getting here. they're getting a wide receiver with the mentality of, if I could be a safety and go out there and hit people and do stuff like that, I'd love to do that. I mean, to me, that's a great fit for the program. Someone who, you know, probably has a body type that makes him kind of a prototypical slot receiver, but a mentality that says, listen, let me go out there and do the stuff that, you know, Lewis Seen and Janelle Aguero and Malachi Starks are doing at Georgia. Let me go out and do some of that kind of stuff. That's what his heart's desire might would have been. Body-wise, he may be a better fit for a wide receiver, but my gosh, that's potentially a very good thing for team chemistry, I would say.
That's why I call him a football player,
yeah,
because he definitely could switch over and play safety if need be. If, you know, receiver doesn't work out and they need him to go over and play safety, he would just be just as equally as good, in my opinion, as a receiver. So Sakobe is a guy that I want to spotlight and just call him a football player.
No, I think that's exactly right. Terrence, it's always great stuff with you. Really, really appreciate that. Obviously, busy times around your program there at Mount Vernon, but also for players, other programs too. Still getting a chance to get the personal coaching that you provide as a part of the Terrence Edwards Wide Receiver Academy. Also doing some great work with some other personal coaches here during this offseason too. So for people who want that kind of last-minute stuff before their spring practice begin, or they want to make this upcoming high school football season in the fall as good for them as it possibly can be, how can they get in touch with you at the Terrence Edwards Wide Receiver Academy?
Right, and just speaking of Juju, even the news broke yesterday with Ryan Montgomery committing to the University of Georgia. Yesterday, we had our bubble work, and Juju Lewis was there with Coach Ron Veal.
That's great.
And he was, you know, getting the work in. You know, he's committed. He's a five-star, but he's still in there getting that same work he's been getting from day one when I met the young man as a sixth grader, and he's still doing the exact same thing. So he was in there yesterday,
great,
getting the work in, and he's not resting on his laurels as being one of the top quarterbacks. He's still perfecting his craft. So if anyone's looking for quarterbacks, receiver, or DB, you could reach me at Terrence Edwards Wide Receiver Academy.
Good stuff, Terrence. Appreciate your time and love to have you out there in the community doing great work with future football players. That's great to see. And we will look forward to talking to you very soon here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp.
Thank you.
Good stuff.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, the one thing no one's going to deny about Julian Juju Lewis is he's putting the work in and he's taking his craft very seriously. And, you know, when you watch him throw, and I've been thankful enough to be able to see him play in person many times, you know, the phrase you use sometimes in baseball is easy gas, you know, guy who throws a fastball without very much effort, or at least seemingly very much effort. To me, that's always the way that Julian kind of plays the game. He just sort of plays the game with kind of a style that almost seems effortless. It's clearly not, but it just sort of looks that way. He's very, very relaxed playing style and, you know, just, you know, very much at ease as he delivers the football. And that's one of the things you can't help but notice when you watch Julian Juju Lewis do what he's doing there. So interesting to hear Terrence Edwards saying, got a chance to be in person with him. Pretty fascinating stuff. Now, let's get ready to go cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And obviously, we are so excited about Allure of the Seas. And I tell you, we were talking to some of our folks on video about this even before our show began today. There's just so much energy around this right now. And for the people who are going to be on board with us, I can't wait to share this with you. I've also been having these conversations as of late with some of our Dog Nation people about this. Jeff Sintel and I have been on the phone a couple of days now, kind of talking about the cruise and getting ready for all of that. And I just love that. And, you know, anytime you take a cruise vacation, that's something I really believe. The part that's free is the conversation that you have getting ready for. And like for me, you know, my family, we love taking cruises. My, you know, wife, my two kids. And when we're going to take one, as the time, you know, gets closer for the cruise to happen, you know, we're kind of sitting around the dinner table talking about what we want to do. We're scrolling online. We're looking at the pictures. We'll go watch YouTube videos like we're seeing right now of Allure of the Seas. And, you know, the kids will go, oh, Daddy, I want to do this. I want to do that. And my wife will have things that she wants to do. I'll have my own personal wish list of things that I want to do. And when it comes to a cruise vacation, that's the part that's free, the part that's exciting to look forward to. And then when you come back, it's the memories that, once again, I mean, you know, to have that connection with the people that you travel with, that's the thing that's the most valuable of all of it. And that lasts far longer than the trip does itself. So I love it. And I love the boardwalk neighbor. How cool does the ship look at night? That's another part of all of this that's so much fun. So I wish you could be on the Dog Nation cruise with us. If you can't, the next best thing, and I do think this is something that you ought to do here for 2024, is reach out to Jessica Slater, travel agent who we, you know, use specifically for our Royal Caribbean cruise needs, and she can plan a great Royal Caribbean cruise vacation for you here in what is left of 2024. Give her a call, 770-718-9147. 770-718-9147. You can also email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com. All right, we're going to go around the SEC, cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And there's no doubt that our friends over 24/7 Sports have sort of gone all in on transfer portal hysteria. Video people, written work type people, that's, I mean, and clearly there's, I guess, a market there, and there's obviously a pretty competitive landscape around the national websites here right now. We kind of understand all of that. There was a story at CBS Sports of the Day owned by 24/7, or I guess CBS owns 24/7, I mean, corporate partners here. Will Backus was the writer about nightmare scenarios in the transfer portal. And it's kind of a fun headline. You sort of look through there. One of the things that was mentioned was the Alabama quarterback situation. And the idea with Jalen Milroe is kind of an entrenched starter right now, and Austin Mack coming in. If other quarterbacks on the Alabama roster, such as Ty Simpson, whatever else, might consider leaving the program, and if that would do anything to kind of, I guess, eliminate Alabama's quarterback depth. What I'm hearing coming out of Tuscaloosa is that Ty Simpson plans on staying right now. And obviously, Kalen DeBoer has sort of talked up Jalen Milroe at every turn. We have wondered if Milroe might not exactly be DeBoer's cup of tea there at the quarterback spot, but thus far, that's not the way that DeBoer is talking. Also, for people who watch the Alabama spring game more closely than me, one of the things that you hear, and this is where, even if we sort of like laugh at the notion of it being a nightmare scenario, that seems kind of overdone a little bit. One of the things that Alabama does seem to be sort of aware of, if you talk to people who watch the Alabama spring game closely, you didn't see a ton of Austin Mack. Mack, I guess, I've been told, was running fourth team. I didn't see the game, but running fourth team at quarterback. What's interesting about that is that Mack came to Tuscaloosa because of Kalen DeBoer. And Mack's arrival was enough, I guess, I mean, from when it looks like a couple of hundred miles away, it looks like Alabama turned a Julian Sayin loose because their guy was going to be Austin Mack. And Sayin has gone to Ohio State, and he's earned at least some praise this spring. Now, people who watched the Ohio State spring game didn't see that from Sayin, but there was some nice things said about Sayin during the spring. So a guy who seems to have been favorably received, far more so than, like, say, Aaron Nolan and some guys like that, there at Ohio State, is Julian Sayin. That's a guy that Alabama turned loose so he could bring in Austin Mack, but during the Alabama A-Day game, allegedly, Mack was only running with the fourth-team offense. So it certainly seems like Kalen DeBoer is at least aware of a possible nightmare scenario, and he didn't want any other Alabama quarterback, you might be led to believe, including perhaps Jalen Milroe himself, thinking about what Austin Mack might be able to do. So therefore, for this particular game, Mack was buried on the depth chart. Now, is that real, or is that just posturing from a coach? We don't quite know, but I would say anything is possible in this day and age. Pretty interesting stuff. Speaking of Alabama, Steve Sarkisian recently spoke out talking about the fact that it only took him, whatever the exact line was, just a couple of seconds or a matter of minutes for him to know that he didn't want any part of the Alabama job and wanted to stay at Texas. And I do take this pretty seriously. I do. And I think as a coach, I probably take Steve Sarkisian more seriously than I used to. Now, Sarkisian's obviously had some issues in his personal life, and that's not really what I'm talking about here right now. I'm talking about judging him as a head coach based on what he's done on the field. And I would say on the basis of that, getting the Texas job feels like a little bit of a stretch, right? He was only okay as Washington head coach. That's going back a good number of years. The issues at USC probably have some personal issues kind of crowding into, you know, what perhaps prevented him from, you know, winning more there. A lot of Falcons fans will tell you he was not a good offensive coordinator here in Atlanta. He was just not. And I think some of that was trying to kind of fit him in as a square peg into the round hole that had been created by Kyle Shanahan, and that didn't quite work. But a lot of Falcons fans will tell you, as a play caller, they were very unimpressed with Steve Sarkisian. Almost the sum total of Sarkisian's resume, in other words, was the incredibly successful stint he had as Alabama offensive coordinator in the pandemic year of 2020. Now, we've said before, smart sports fans know 2020 didn't count in any sport, really. But Sarkisian's success was undeniable. I mean, it was fantastic. I think on a single season basis, some of this aided by the fact they weren't playing any defenses that year. But on a single season basis, Sarkisian is the best offensive coordinator, I believe, that Nick Saban ever had. And that's kind of largely what got Sark the Texas job. And I think there was a conversation around Sarkisian of, are we sure this is a Texas-level head coach, or at least what Texas aspires to be? Are we sure that's what Sarkisian is? I thought one of the real stories in college football last year was Sarkisian took a much bigger step towards being viewed as a serious head coach. I don't really know what my top 10 coaches are in college football. I haven't done that list. But if I did, I believe that Sarkisian would probably be on it on the basis of what they did a year ago. I think he would anyway. And given what Texas seems to have in place, the idea that you might stay there and not feel the need to go back to Alabama, it kind of makes some sense here. So Sarkisian will get headlines because of talking about turning down the Alabama job. But I think the larger story is that as Texas comes into the SEC, I have to admit, at least a little bit, they feel a little more ready for the SEC than I perhaps thought that they would. One more thing to get to you here. Speaking of coaches talking about quarterbacks, Billy Napier has spent some time as of late kind of talking up Graham Mertz, saying getting him back was the most important thing for the Florida offseason. And I'll admit this, you know, Mertz was not terrible last year. He was not. He was, you know, well, he was one of the few bright spots for Florida as a team. And at just sort of face value, it would seem that any chance that Florida has to be better than expectations, and expectations right now are Billy Napier getting fired during the season, perhaps early, being better than expectations requires getting something, you know, positive and good from Graham Mertz. That's just the easiest thing to notice about this Florida program overall. However, what's also interesting here is that the quarterback waiting in the wings is DJ Lagway. Now, just sort of raw talent on paper, the assumption is that Lagway is a more impressive prospect than Graham Mertz is, even though Mertz got more experience. If you're Billy Napier, how do you handle that here this year? Because you got to give your fans something to believe in. And right now, Florida has very little to believe in. You know, Tennessee kind of latched on to Nico Iamaleva. It's easy to sort of understand why they did. Does Florida have kind of a opportunity with that when it comes to DJ Lagway? If it does, they probably need to play him. You know, last year, Tennessee didn't play Nico very much to the bowl game. You sort of wonder, you know, for Napier, who probably finds himself a little bit more of a precarious spot than Josh Heupel would have been, does he need to put Lagway on the field? In other words, is this a situation where Florida needs to do a two-quarterback system because they got to showcase Lagway a little bit at the risk of losing him, if not, maybe? But even though they kind of, I think, legitimately feel pretty good about their starter, how Billy Napier handles quarterback could be an interesting sort of window into his likelihood of being able to hold on to that job. That could be worth watching. And we'll make that cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. And as we wrap up here today, a couple of golden shoes to give you. We'll show you the first one on the screen here. So I wrote about this on Saturday on the X platform, the fact that I love the fact that Georgia uses both red and black shakers for G-Day. And half the stadium got the black, half the stadium got the red. I said that's kind of just a cool example of Georgia making this feel like a real football game, other than, you know, elementary school field day that was happening in Oxford, or, you know, pillow fight happening up there in Columbus, Ohio. Georgia's playing real football. Well, a guy that some of y'all know online is Skinny Dog 10. He also wrote in about this to say that the flat handle pom-pom, we'll call them shakers, but the flat handle shaker that the red one is. The black one does have the long, skinny handle. The red one has the flat handle. He says Georgia will never win again until the stick handle pom-poms return. Well, the black shaker was the stick, which I do like better. Kind of funny stuff from Skinny there on that. Also, I always love it when some of y'all like some of the same stuff that I do. And so our next golden shoe goes to Bubba with that in mind, noticing that on the way from Dr. Pepper, perhaps to show up this summer, how about some creamy coconut flavor for Dr. Pepper? They've gotten very creative with some of their flavors lately, and probably, you know, going very well with summertime festivities. Some creamy coconut Dr. Pepper, or creamy coconut Dr. Pepper Zero Sugar. So Bubba having some fun with that from our friends at Dr. Pepper. That'll always get you noticed for a golden shoe. Bubba, great job by you on that. How about lousy stinking Gators? Listen, they got nothing to enjoy right now. No fun shakers for spring games. No specialty soft drink beverages. Nothing good at all. 1,258 days. It's also how long it's been since Florida's beaten Georgia. That's our Gator Hater Updater. We'll see all of you back here tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.